The scriptures reveal that the Apostle Peter is the dominant figure amongst the 12 disciples. And in many ways, his influence continues in the Christian church. You remember that he was one of the first called to follow. He was invited to meet Jesus by Andrew, and follow he did. He did so loudly and impulsively. And Peter's story is one of uneven discipleship. It is a discipleship marked by being flawed and insightful, and it has passion. And he served as a kind of a representative, as a kind of picture of what following Jesus can be like, for better and for worse, for countless disciples through the ages. Peter stuck with Jesus, stayed with him as he grew from being an obscure preacher from some hick part of Judea to being the toast of the town in the nation's capital. At least he was a crowd favorite for a weekend. But after Palm Sunday, it was that descent into chaos, and by the end of the week, all was lost. The movement that had once been so full of promise, it was destroyed as Jesus was publicly rebuked, and he died an agonizing and humiliating death. And he, Peter, he'd fled with the rest of the followers, just as Jesus predicted. He'd even denied knowing Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. So Jesus was dead, and Peter had proved to all that he was weak and unreliable, a pathetic leader of a pitiable group who had backed the wrong horse. It was done. And Peter was done. At least that's the way it seemed until the early hours of the first day of the week. Peter and some of the other disciples, when they heard the news from the women who had been to the tomb that Jesus' grave was now empty, they were astounded. And they bore stunning news. It was actually earth-shaking news for the disciples and for Peter that Jesus was alive again. God had raised him from the grave. And sure enough, Jesus began turning up. He appeared to the disciples, and he began to appear to more and more people. And there were more than 500 witnesses to Jesus' resurrection before he finally ascended to heaven. But in the immediate aftermath of the resurrection, how did Peter process this information? On Easter Day, and even on Easter Day plus one, what did he do? How did he make sense of this? How did he get his head around these events? Frankly, I don't think he could. I mean, this doesn't make sense. Because between you and me, people don't normally get resurrected. Now, many of us, we've been processing the resurrections since childhood, so it's probably harder for us to pick up on the wildness and the weirdness of this event, the way it turned lives upside down. I mean, I've been contemplating the resurrection throughout my life. It was a key element of 4 years of theological school, and it still boggles my mind. So for Peter, just hours with the news? This has been an emotional roller coaster for him. And so he starts to shut down. It's an important thing to remember about today. It was good news. It's still good news. But it is also completely disorienting news. Because this is a stunning act of God. It means that things are not as they seem. It means our assumptions about the way things work just might be incorrect. And Peter can't make this fit into his world. And so he does what lots of us do when our world doesn't make any sense. He did something that's been a part of my life experience, and it's probably been part of yours. He went back to doing what he was doing before everything got weird. Got a crisis? You go do something familiar. When the going gets rough, you get ordinary. You go cut the grass. You go shopping. You take a hike. You go to a movie. In Peter's case, he figures the best thing to do is do what he's always done. He goes back to fishing. So Peter looks backwards to make sense of today. And that's a bit ironic. Because Peter is thinking about the past, but that's where his problem lay, in the past. I mean, he may have returned to fishing, but do you think for a minute that he could get the events of Thursday evening and what happened on the Friday, do you think he could get those things out of his mind? At the Last Supper, Jesus had warned everyone that things were going to get tough, that betrayal was in the air. And Peter, oh, he was brash and wildly confident. He's promised that while others might fall, he would stand strong. I mean, I've got your back, Jesus. You can count on me. I'll be there. And then they came to arrest Jesus, and the situation got strange and confused. And the next thing you know, Peter is hightailing it away from the one he loved, and he is running for his life. And sure, there was that ill-fated attempt to get near the action when Jesus was being interrogated. And then the woman at the fire asked him if he was one of Jesus' disciples. And she kept asking him, and Peter kept denying. And so Peter is out there fishing. He's out there on the water, and he can still hear himself saying, No, you've got the wrong guy. I don't know the man. And he can still see Jesus looking at him through the window. And he knows that Jesus knows. And Peter's heart is just broken. And after the women had been to the tomb and they reported back to the disciples, what do you think went through Peter's mind? I mean, on one hand, he would be overwhelmed. He'd be thrilled at the news. But on the other hand, he was probably petrified. He was probably quite fearful. I mean, after all, he'd abandoned Jesus, denied him once, twice, three times. He'd been exposed as a fraud. He had been publicly dishonored. He was proven to be pathetic. And so he went back to fishing because it was something that was safe. It was something that he understood. But he also did it because there might be some accounting if he'd been required to stick around. And he just couldn't look at Jesus in the eyes again. It was time to make himself scarce. So they're back there, out there on the Sea of Galilee, and the fishing, it had been better. They'd work all through the night, and they have nothing to show for their labor, but as the sun comes up, they hear a voice on the shore. It's, "How's the fishing?" "Gee, thanks, buddy." And then they hear, "You might have more luck if you fished on the other side of the boat." "Oh, good. Thank you for the help." And then they say to each other, "What the heck?" And they throw their nets on the other side, and wouldn't you know it, they start hauling in nets full of fish. Net full after net full after net full. And it's kind of strange, isn't it? It was Jesus' voice that allowed Mary Magdalene to recognize Jesus on Easter morning. But Peter and the other disciples, it took something miraculous for the penny to drop. And the disciple who's described as the one who Jesus loved, and it's often believed that that was John, he suddenly turns to Peter and he says, "I'm thinking that's the Lord, Peter." And you know, Peter now knows. Doesn't matter. He's not going to get away from Jesus. He can't run away. He can't hide away in plain sight out there on the Sea of Galilee. And he realizes that he's been temporarily avoiding what will be an inevitability. And he's going to have to face it eventually. And so he dives into the water, always impetuous. And he swims to shore. And when Peter climbs out on the beach, Jesus is waiting for him, and he says to him, "Peter, why did you abandon me? Why did you deny me?" No, that's not what happened at all, was it? What happens is grace. Pure grace. The gospel writer John goes on to tell us that Jesus actually says, "Hey, why don't we take some of those fish and let's have us a barbecue?" I can identify that. In my family, when things are crazy, we eat. And after having breakfast, Jesus turns to Peter and he asks him, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, I do." And you know that he's thinking, "And I know it didn't look like it." But they have that exchange three times, and you don't have to be some hotshot biblical scholar to make the connection that of course I love you matches quite well with the three times that Peter denied Jesus. And Peter, he knew that as well. He knew that he was now the recipient of amazing grace. The abandonment and the denial, that was done. It was history. And that's a key element of what we're celebrating this morning. That stuff in your past that causes you to ache, it got taken care of in the wee hours of this morning. But Peter, actually, if he'd been listening a bit closer, He might have known sooner. In our drama today, we saw Jesus move Peter back to early this morning, to the events of the first Easter morning that we heard described in Mark's gospel. And in that particular retelling of what happened at the tomb, the women, who were the very first witnesses to the resurrection, I might add, the women encounter this young man dressed in white robes, and perhaps he's an angel. And he gives them some instructions. He says, go tell his disciples and Peter that he's going ahead of you to Galilee. You'll see him there just like he told you. Go tell his disciples and Peter. Go tell his disciples and Peter. Why particularly mention Peter? I suspect because Peter carried a most heavy burden of guilt. And the grace and the forgiveness of God was being poured out on Peter from the very first. Even before Peter was aware of it. And that is true about grace. It's always there first, before anything else. It is unconditional. It just arrives. And hey, we've all got something. We've all got some history that can weigh on us. That when Jesus comes to us, he's not especially concerned about the past in the sense that forgiveness was what got let loose on Good Friday. It pretty much deals with all that stuff. And so Jesus says, do you love me, Phil? And I say, of course I love you. So fill in your own names here, because you're supposed to. Do you love me? Asks Jesus. And you say, of course I do. And what does he say next? He says, so feed my sheep. It's interesting. Jesus is wanting us to let it go and get thinking about where we're going next. When Jesus says to Peter, do you love me and feed my sheep? He's saying that it's now time to focus on your call. Get to caring for the ones whom Jesus cared for. And think about this. This is quite remarkable. The people who denied and deserted him, the ones who made themselves scarce on Good Friday, they're exactly the ones that Jesus decides he needs to commission. And it just knocks me out. Jesus' work is entrusted to failures and traitors and betrayers and losers, people who would not be out of place in Qualicum Beach. And so I wonder, what is the risen Christ calling you to be about? Because feed my sheep is addressed to you too. As we've discussed here before, last words are really important. Pay attention to people's last words. And Jesus' last words to his disciples on the beach that day, they were, follow me. They're the same for us today. Follow me. There's so much for us to do. It's a good day. For he is risen. Thanks be to God. Amen.